All right, well, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to the next edition of our speaker series. This is John Patika Jr., portfolio manager here at the Patika Wealth Management Group. And we're coming in from the home of the new Super Bowl champs, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So go Bucks. And we're happy to have our guest, Ebi Gary, here with us today. Ebi is the head of our municipal portfolio strategy team at UBS Asset Management. He's in charge of all the municipal fixed income strategies, including municipal money market funds, separately managed account platforms. He leads a very highly experienced 15-member team of specialists that's supported by the UBS Global Fixed Income Resources. The team's portfolio construction is notable for in-depth proprietary credit research, and he joined UBS back in 1996 as a senior vice president in charge of all tax-free investments. Prior to UBS, Ebi was over at JP Morgan, and he was the vice president of Global Asset Management Group and co-managed the municipal department over there. Ebi, welcome.
Thank you, John. Glad to be on board.
Perfect, Ebi. Well, let's go ahead and get to it. With the current environment and low interest rates, why would we invest in municipal bonds? Won't we get stuck?
Getting that question a lot these days. The key to this in municipals is, and the way we've worked with clients on this is, I think everyone can agree that a diversified portfolio is very critical. And in doing so, what you want to have is assets that are not all linked in how they will perform in given environments. And what you found is clearly equity should be part of it, as should be fixed income, as well as cash, real estate, alternatives, et cetera, et cetera. But let's just stick with the what I like to call the big three, cash, fixed income, and equity. That relationship and how what clients own in each one of those asset classes, that will be determined in your asset allocation for those on the phone who are working with John and his team on how to best allocate it. And that's a personal decision. We've seen clients with anywhere from 80 to 90% in fixed income because that's where they want to be, and others with as little as 20 to 25. And that, you know, that's, again, it's personal and their risk tolerance and how volatile they'd like their portfolio to be. But having said that, my point to this is that some of it belongs in the asset class. And what you found is that if you are a U.S. taxpayer on a risk-adjusted and return-adjusted and tax-adjusted basis, in the fixed income allocation, municipals make the most sense. Here's the key part, over the long term. And that, to me, is the critical part. And we could show you data all day long that shows you that it is not correlated to the equity markets. And the key is that when the equity markets have great difficulty, the municipal market is positive, which means it is a great buffer to the volatility that can happen. And when the fixed income markets have difficulty, tends to be when the economy is doing better and the equity markets are doing quite well. So what you'll find in any analysis that you do is that this asset class is very, very solid. The second part to that is also how we manage money. Now, most people think, and as the question comes about, fixed income, I actually personally think fixed income can be misleading in your portfolio. Yes, it is a fixed income stream. Every bond has a coupon that is fixed income stream. However, the principal is constantly moving around. The value of that security is constantly changing. Obviously, the one thing that is greatly different from an equity side is that equities are perpetual and bonds have maturities. You will get your money back as long as it doesn't default at a given point in time. So my point to this is that most people think of that as the asset class that way. We don't. What we do is look at what is the value of the principal and how will it perform if rates rise or if rates fall? How will it perform if longer maturities do better in price performance or shorter maturities do better in price performance, what I call a yield curve shift? How will different credits be? And the idea is our intermediate flagship strategy is active. And very simply, because of the inefficiencies in the municipal market, because of what I just explained, most people think of it as just yield, there are parts of the market that are cheap, and there are parts of the market that are expensive. And very simply, sell the expensive, buy the cheap. And that tends to be when we're contrarian, when things fall in and out of favor, that's what drives the relative value or cheapness or richness of a given security or a given sector or a given type of security, which was how we add that value. So to answer your question, it should be a part of your overall portfolio, and that it is, while yields are low, it is not the only piece of the equation. To give you an example, while the yield in our intermediate flagship strategy right now is only about 75 basis points, if we can do what we've done in the past, add performance by buying in the right parts of the maturity spectrum and be in the right credits and essentially mirror the track record we've had for the last 20 plus years, the total returns, if interest rates don't change, will be another 1% to 1.5% above that. So there are two big things. Is that it's not just yield, and it is a key part of an overall portfolio.
Thanks, Ebby. Ebby, let's talk about credit. I mean, credit is a big deal. With a lot of these states having stretched budgets, what do you see?
Yeah, credit is very imperative right now. What COVID has done to the municipal market, and I want to make sure everyone on this call understands, we are solely an investment grade manager. We do not buy credits that are below investment grade, actually known as junk. That is a part of the municipal asset class, but we stay away from it because what I said in the answer in the first question is our job is to be the core holding. The difficulty with junk securities or below investment grade securities is they are highly correlated to the equity market. So it just destroys our thesis of before of why we should be in this. There's nothing wrong with it. It's something that's a different piece. It can be a piece to an overall portfolio, but in our opinion, it belongs really like almost in the equity portion of it because that's how it behaves. It behaves very highly correlated and has the type of returns, positive or negative, much more associated with the movements of the equity markets. So now let's get back into the specifics. What we have done is looked at survival through all this. And what has shifted in our credit research, in our team of the six analysts that we have that are following the credits that we believe acceptable and also of value, and I'll come back to that, is that what has changed is how long of a run rate they have. What is their liquidity? And what I mean by that is how long can they survive if things really go bad? Like, you know, that old phrase, strive for the best, but prepare for the worst. And I'll give you an example of it and how we're utilizing it and where there are giving us strong indications of things to avoid and things that are an opportunity. And my best example of this through the pandemic are airports. Airports borrow money through the municipal market. Now, these are not airlines. These are the actual airports. Think of LAX, Miami, Chicago O'Hare, Dallas Fort Worth. You see where I'm going, these different airports. So we looked at the 12 major metropolitan airports. And the reason why we looked at these, and these are the only airports we traffic in, is we consider them essential service. These are origination, destination, and hub airports. And you can tell the ones I just rattled off were the largest ones. But we looked at the largest ones of 12, and we decided, well, what is their liquidity? And what I mean by that is how much cash and liquidity do they have on hand that if they were to receive no revenues, how long could they survive with their current expenditure run rate? And what we found was the lowest of those 12 was about 220 days. The best was 1,300 days. That is a huge disparity. Now, what's very interesting in that is that the municipal market likes to basically categorize these all as one. Well, I don't like airports because what's going on is really bad. Run rates are really down. Passengers are at only 60%. That's after coming out of only 20%, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what we feel is that, well, these ones can survive and we will start to come out the other end of it. What's very interesting is the difference in value between the low and the top is very, very minimal because it's all being painted with the same brush. So think of that as the top three or four airports are actually buys and the bottom five are actually avoids. And that's where there's huge opportunities in the asset class because it tends to get pigeonholed into one big sector. Should I buy GOs or should I buy REITs or et cetera? And it's the same thing at the healthcare side. You say something about hospitals. There are plenty of good ones and there are plenty of ones that are having difficulty. So there are clearly areas of avoidance, but there's also very big opportunities. That old phrase, the baby thrown out with the bathwater. And you do have to obviously watch pensions. I think it'd be very important for me to mention that. The pension liabilities they have and how they're handling it is very, very critical. There are five states that are the poster children of pension problems in this country. Three of them are avoids. Two of them are actually buys because of how they are handling it and what their potential is to come out of it and what their underlying economy and wealth is. So those are because what's last thing on credit and how we look at it that I think is very important. How many participants do look at credit research is they think of it, first of all, many do their what I like to call research through the media. They read about how bad Illinois is, which is bad, don't get me wrong. And they read how bad Connecticut is or New Jersey is or Kentucky is. Those are the ones that are having great difficulty. And what do? They immediately won't buy it. And then having said that, is also the next step on that is that they also, what if they do their research, they'll look at a specific issuer and the credit research team doing it will look at it and say, okay, well, this credit is in good shape. It's improving. Guess what? It gets a thumbs up. If this credit is deteriorating or is having some difficulty, guess what it tells their portfolio manager? It's a thumbs down. You can't buy it. I actually find that kind of philosophy somewhat comical, and here's why. Think of it this way. Imagine an equity analyst doing their complete research on a company, goes through all of its balance sheets and its legal situations, its sales projections, et cetera, and then makes a buy or sell recommendation without looking at the price of the stock. That's what happens in munis. And the airport example is a perfect example of that, in that they haven't looked at the underlying, but the other side is what is the price? And there are ones that are a weak AA credit that is probably going to get downgraded into the A category, but our analysis will tell us that's where it's going to bottom out, yet it's at weak A or even triple B type levels, and triple B is investment grade. So that's where we can see opportunities. So I wanted to just make sure that we get across it's all about in our credit side is its value. And then staying on top of it is very key. And the last example I want to give you is, but don't get me wrong, I'm talking that I have talked a lot about opportunities. Without question, the best thing you can do from a credit perspective is avoid the ones that are trouble. And I'll go back to a call that our group made back a few years ago was at a little island in the Caribbean, Puerto Rico. We got out in like 2009, 2010. We were a little early, but boy, that's a lot better than too late. So credit is definitely some issues. It is something that we're constantly surveilling, and you have to be incredibly nimble because things have changed. We're still gaining a lot of information. What will the new Biden administration do? How much support will they give? Ongoing and very fluid, which is why surveillance is critical. The days of buy and hold are over, in my opinion. Someone buys a security and forgets about it is dangerous. Very long-winded answer, John. I apologize. But I hope that it's so vitally important today because of the shifts that are going on in the economy, in the administration, and how municipalities are weathering the COVID storm.
Can you talk a little bit more about your team and the value that your team would bring to our clients using some of these strategies?
Sure. We're 15 deep, as mentioned, and you know, Gulp, I've been in the business 40 years doing this. We are traders, portfolio managers, credit analysts, and what I'll call quantitative researchers. That's within our group. The quantitative research that we do is also heavily supported outside of the group, that when we see something that we want to run and do, you know, these deep analytics using mathematical models, we'll go to our quant group outside to build it, and then we'll maintain it. So there's lots of kind of research that we will utilize to determine where we see value. Analyzing what we call the yield curve, the maturity spectrum, we have taken an optimizer that tells us if we're going to have a portfolio with an average life of 9 years, or to go a little deeper dive, its duration, which tells you its sensitivity to change in interest rates. If we want that to be, we'll call it 5 years, or the what's called the average life of the portfolio, 10 years, what is the optimal way to get there? Most of you think, well, a 10-year average life, would you just ladder it out to 20 years? Absolutely not, because there are pockets of that yield curve or maturity spectrum that are expensive because there's huge demand for it, and then the other is there is opportunities to avoid because there's so much demand and others where it's out of favor, and that's where there's just big opportunities. So what our portfolios look like from a maturity spectrum, it looks what I'll call lumpy. There are areas that we're overweighting and underweighting. Credit, I kind of just went through. It's all about value, not thumbs up, thumbs down. Another deep analytical stuff that we do is, now I'm getting into really deeper quantitative stuff, is premium bonds with call features. If you think about it, if you buy a bond that's callable, the issuer has the ability to call it away, that call has value. What are you getting for it? Because you're selling it, because it's embedded. And when you're selling a bond, you're buying it back. Those are the analytics we do, and that is highly inefficient because those bonds are the simplest way to put this is that many bonds that we own are in the 15 to 20 year area, but they're premium bonds with 7 or 8 year calls. The beauty of that, even just from a yield perspective, you're getting the yield of a 15 year bond, but the volatility of a 7. That's really good. And, oh, by the way, its principal performs, goes up more if interest rates go down, but goes down less if interest rates go up. So those are the kind of things that we're doing that can add value versus the passive approach or the what I'll call brokerage-like style. It helps quite a bit. And, you know, there's our whole way of adding value is in areas where we have what we call an information advantage. And it's this kind of analytics, curve, credit, the structure of a bond, how a portfolio should be constructed. All of those things play into determining what is rich and what is cheap and how to outperform and get those numbers I talked about before to try to get a percent to a percent and a half per annum above a passive laddered approach.
Well, thanks, Abby. And thank you again for joining us today. I know we're running towards the end of our time here. And if anyone on the call would like any information on any of Abby's tax-free bond strategies, please feel free to reach out to us. We'd be happy to talk more in detail on his strategies and how they would fit into your portfolio goals. And Abby, thank you again for joining us. Really appreciate it. That is a lot of information on this asset class. So thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks, you. I appreciate being invited. Hopefully this has been informational and educational for those on the call. Please reach out to John and team on if you have any questions. As I like to say, they know where I live and can get a hold of us. So hopefully this has been informative, and please enjoy the rest of your day. And John, thanks again for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone, I wish everybody a happy and safe President's Day weekend, and take care.